welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting. Now, in case y'all didn't know, they've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider, and you can find video archives, merch, and more on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Now, here are your hosts, two guys who have been broadcasting online since 1996, the Godfathers of Podcasting themselves. Donnie
DeSilva
and Chris Tidwell.
It is Thursday, September 21st, 2023. My name is Donnie, and that is the Martin to my Lewis, the Laurel to my Hardy, the Pinky to my Brain. Notorious TID, Chris Tidwell. What's up, Tid?
I thought you were going to say the Pinky to your Tuscadero for a second there. That would have been... Oof. Right?
Like, I didn't date myself enough with the Laurel and Hardy reference. I
gotta go, somebody's got to date you. Might as well be yourself. How you doing, Donnie?
I'm doing well. It's been good. A very busy day. It's been a very busy week.
Yeah.
Lots going on. I mentioned last week, and I'm super stoked. Tomorrow night, we will be hanging out at Joker's Nightclub in Richmond Hill, Ontario, checking out the first ever Greater Toronto Area performance of our pal, Joey Medina. He's going to be in the house. I'm so stoked to hang out with him. We're going to go for dinner first, and then we're going to hit up the club, watch him do his thing. And I'm stoked beyond words, my man.
That's pretty cool that you got Joey Medina to fly in and do a show for your birthday. That's a pretty sweet pull for you there, buddy. I'm proud of you.
It just kind of worked out that way.
Sure it did. It kind of worked out. You were like, hey, I got an idea for my birthday this year. Hey, Joey, you know, it'd be cool if you did a show in Toronto. I happen to know a place, and look at that, and a date. I think we can make this work out. And then you lured this little fucking Mexican up to Canada to fucking dance around for you, right, on your birthday. That is some fucking privileged shit right there, Donnie. I don't know what else could possibly be more white privilege than that, bro.
You know what's funny? You sound like all my 11-year-old. My 11-year-old actually said to me, it's like a kid's party where you hire a circus clown.
Well, I mean, I didn't say circus clown, but Jesus Christ.
No, it wasn't quite like that. The honest to God truth of what happened was Joey got at me Sunday. He's showing his short film Meet Los Parents at a film festival in Toronto. He's up for a whole bunch of awards, and he said to me, do you want to come hang out at the film festival? I'm like, yeah, I would love to. And I said, hey, wait a minute, when are you getting into town? He said, I'm getting in on the 21st. And I said, oh, if you're gonna be in town, do you want me to see if I can get you a gig at a comedy club? He's like, I would fucking love it. So I called our old friend, former guest on this show, Dave Curran, who owns Joker's Comedy Club. And I said, hey, you interested in having Joey Medina in your place performing? He's like, fuck yeah. That's how that all came together. Just a lot of happenstance and good luck.
How much of the door are you keeping?
I'm keeping zero door.
Oh, giving it all to me? That's nice. Appreciate you.
I will have one full bottle of Maker's Mark. That's what I will do.
Oh, okay. So you're still driving.
It's just one bottle.
Well, good for you.
Now, Tid, I'm not that guy.
Good for you.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. If you are in the Greater Toronto area, either Friday or Saturday, Joey's got shows both nights. Go check them out at Joker's Nightclub. There's still some tickets available, I do believe. You can go to, I think it's Jokers. I got to find the website. Is it Jokers 905? Jokers Comedy Club. I'm live Googling here, folks. Jokers.ca. Go to Jokers.ca. They're Jokers 905 on social media.
You could have Jokers.ca. That. You could have just guessed Jokers.ca being like it's Jokers in Canada and had a better chance and wasted less time.
Maybe you're right. I'll wear that one. So all kinds of stuff has been going on this week. There's stuff I want to talk to Tid about as we get onto the show, including but not limited to a story that I'm sure you've been paying attention to. the big merger between UFC and WWE finally closed last week. They are now collectively known as TKO Holdings Group. And then they went on a firing spree. My favorite was last week, WWE president, chairman, whatever his new title is, Nick Khan, he sends a message to all of their corporate staff and says, "Hey guys, on Wednesday, everybody work from home." Like, and then by the end of Wednesday, 100 of them got their pink slips.
Yeah. Yeah. And then everybody moved over to, you know, talent. You had to know it was happening. I've had conversations. I had a conversation with somebody last evening about this before all of the cuts came down for talent, and, you know, said there's no difference between this and losing talent, you know, the day after WrestleMania, which is always a consistent thing, right? So, I mean, you just kind of have to get used to it working for a company like this and know that it's happening when a merger happens. Like, it's not working for just a normal wrestling company. They're a corporation, right? So you have to know that merger happens. First thing that happens, cutbacks all day.
Absolutely, at the corporate level, because you've got people. You don't need two directors of marketing. You don't need two vice presidents of branding. You need one person to do that job.
You also need to cut a lot of money because all of the big CEOs got like huge bonuses.
Yeah, they did. But you know what? When people complain, like when fans say, "Oh, it's not fair. They fired 10 wrestlers today." Listen, the NBA, which is the professional sports league I pay the closest amount of attention to, year over year, 23% of the people that were in the league last year will not be in the league this year. And we're not talking about guys that are retired. We're talking about, it's mostly that middle group, right?
Criminals.
The veterans. They've been around for 6 to 10 years. No jobs for those guys.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure it's the same in the NFL. Might be higher.
They'll open up restaurants and gyms, you know, things like that. That's pretty much
car dealerships. A lot of car dealerships.
Yeah. Car dealerships, car washes.
Yeah.
Car washes is very profitable, right?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I spoke to our pal, former NBA tough guy, Reggie Slater, the other day. He's got his whole chain of like car repair shops, like a bunch of, you know, Meineke type places. You know what I mean?
That's amazing.
Yeah, maybe he's doing great. Maybe
they can go on reality shows.
Is that your segue? Ted with the segue. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time right now, speaking of reality shows, for the big hello. And this week's guest, well, she's no stranger to reality shows. She's a friend of this program, and she's a former police officer. And on social media, she's known as the Butcher Goddess, and with good reason. She's an executive chef for high rollers the world over, and she can glam it up like it's nobody's fucking business. Of course, if it's a Sunday, she'll be strapped to the couch, watching NFL football and yelling at the TV. She had me yelling at the TV last summer when she was one of the cast members of Big Brother season 24. I was constantly screaming for her to align with different people. You're making poor choices, in hopes that somehow she would make it to the end. Unfortunately, she didn't, but she was super entertaining to watch while she was on there, and she's been awesome to get to know since she's been out of there. The last time she was on this program, she said she could drink more tequila than Tid, and that the Eagles weren't going to make the Super Bowl. And Tid hasn't stopped laughing since. Ladies and gentlemen, she loves to dance, but not on a pole. She'll cook anything and does it with soul. If you're not a fan, then you're an asshole. Her New York Giants ain't going to the bowl. Now give it up for Big Brother alumni. It's Nicole.
Oh, amazing. Thank you. I feel like that's probably one of the best introductions I've ever heard in my entire life.
And hey, if it was like better than the last time you're on, I'm doing something right.
I mean, that was amazing. I'm pretty sure the last time I was on, I was having issues with the internet. And literally, as you started introducing me, my internet went out and I'm like running to the room to make sure that the modem is working. And now I'm here. So we're good.
It's funny you say that, because normally when we have a guest on the show and I do the big audio essay and do some kind of introduction, people go, "Oh, that was a good introduction." And when you were on the show last time, you completely fucking no-sold it. You were like, Just totally no love, no nothing. I was this close tonight to just saying, ladies and gentlemen, it's Nicole. Doing nothing else. Because I'm like, fuck it. She didn't put it over last time. I'm not doing nothing.
No, that was amazing. I think like I the specific line that says, if you're not a fan, you're an asshole, is I need to put that on a shirt and just say, like, get over yourself, deal with it. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. I have friends. I have friends in high places. And yeah, all I can say is fuck you if you don't like me. I don't know what else to say.
Hey, love it.
How are you, buddy? But at the same time, I'm really nice and I like to do nice things for people. But hey, give me a break. I'm a Giants fan.
I'm really nice.
That's, I mean, okay, let's go there. Like, let's obviously, you showed up wearing a Dolphins shirt. Like, you can't pick two teams, first of all. We've had this discussion, but yet you did it again. And I see that you're wearing the jersey. You're wearing the jersey of the team that's actually doing good so far. I mean, let's face it, your quarterback and Tyreek Hill, if nobody's going to stop those two, then why not go places? But you've got no Saquon Barkley in the New York Jets.
No. Right? Poor guy.
Your quarterback sucks.
What quarterback? We don't have a quarterback.
Right?
I mean, we're talking about the Giants. They literally, the first game, they were playing as if they were still – I'm pretty sure they didn't even know that preseason was over. The game was atrocious. I couldn't even watch after the first half. I was completely embarrassed. But you know what? Just like the Mets, I'm a huge fan and I love the Giants. And it's just, you know, it's going to be, it'll always be a conversation. It'll never be an argument. So
I literally mentioned that last week on the show when we had Memphis from Big Brother on the program. And we were talking a little bit of football. And I said, you know, I was shit talking Nicole from BB24 and said, did anyone not tell the Giants that the preseason's done so? 40-0 to start the year.
It's the so fucking count. Bad. And yeah. Honestly, last week's game was no better, but I mean, they pulled out the win. Listen, as long as, and now of course I'm jumping teams for a second. As long as Tua can stay healthy, we're going to keep that momentum because he's got some other rock stars other than Tyreek, and I'm pretty excited. I'm going to be at the Dolphins game on Sunday, and they're playing the Broncos, and that's going to be a good game.
See, Ted, this is the key to being a happy sports fan. You choose a league, and you just cheer for half the league.
Well, right? I feel like she picks her team, like it's a real life fantasy team. I'm going to take a couple of players from this team, a couple of players from this team. She's just rocking like seven jerseys at a time throughout the day, shooting them all for social media.
I feel like I have to do that. And the problem with that is, you know, like I'm a huge Russ Wilson fan. And the fact that I get to watch him play in person, I'm pretty stoked about that. But, you know, I'm still an OBJ fan. Like, Odell Beckham Jr., like, I don't care how many injuries he has. Like, he still has something about him that's, like, just finesse. And so, I mean, I don't even know who he's playing for these days. But, no, I do know who he's playing for. But it's just, it's one of those things where, like, when you're a fantasy football person, you start loving all these teams and all these players for no goddamn reason other than the fact that they scored fucking 22 points for you and you're fucking happy.
How many leagues are you in right now? That's it? All right. That's fair.
Yeah, just two.
All right. That's safe.
I got an opening.
Listen, last year there was a mental capacity of like zero. You guys were the only podcast I ever agreed to do last year. And, you know, my nerves were pretty high. And I think making any decision other than like taking a shower and using the bathroom was pretty bleak. And so this time last year, I'm just happy where I'm at today because can't fucking tell me nothing. I'm just
ain't nobody got no running backs. This is a problem right now in the NFL. Like running backs are falling like flies. This Monday night curse is like ridiculous.
It's so sad.
It's so sad. Ridiculous. Like you got players blowing their knees out or blowing their Achilles out on AstroTurf. You got guys getting chopped in the knee. You know what I mean? Like Nick Chubb did or whatever. Like there's
brutal
injuries happening this year, man. It is. And we're 3 weeks in. This is insanity what these guys are doing. So I mean,
yeah, it's worse than that first season after COVID. I mean, fuck, my fantasy team, I got second place that year because half of my team was like all backup bullshit. And so all my friends, like they all had people who were playing who just kept getting COVID. So.
Hey, listen, if the two football fantasy teams is enough for you, I've got an opening in my NBA fantasy league. Then we're drafting in the first week of October. If you want to join.
No, that I don't even like the NBA.
Whoa, word. Clip that right there. High five. Virtual high five right there. Boom.
We were friends.
Oh, shut up. Who needs
you? We are friends. But listen, the NBA can't touch college basketball for shit.
Oh, I love college basketball.
I will watch college basketball. I will stand on my feet and I will cheer and I will like go to town for a college team, specifically the Miami Hurricanes. But I'm going to say is that when you have these kids playing in college, they are playing with their heart and their soul. And like, it's not about what shoe deal, what car deal, what whatever deal, whatever endorsement they have. I'm going to say that hands down, college basketball blows NBA basketball out of the park.
Well, with the new licensing deal that they have now in NCAA, those superstar guys are getting those those early shoe deals and merch and all that shit. So there is a little bit
I
of that.
Get it. Yeah.
I hear what you're saying. I love college basketball. Like I had family visiting from the US this past weekend, and we made plans so that the first round of March Madness this year, which is going to be at Barclays in Brooklyn, I'm fucking going. And I can't wait because I've never been able to go in person.
I'm down for that shit.
Oh, come join us, man. Yeah. I'm definitely fucking going. I'm so hyped for this. But my biggest issue with college ball is they are running the same plays, the same actions, the same shit that they did 30 years ago. There's been no innovation in college basketball for 30, 40 years. The NBA, it's like, you can't do that shit anymore because like, it's so advanced. But I get what you're saying. Optically, it just looks like they're trying harder. I get it.
I just feel like with college basketball, we're in a place where, you know, there's still that innocence of an athlete where it's just like, they're playing, NBA players, they're playing with their heart and soul. Like, I mean, come on, I live in Fort Lauderdale, the Miami Heat. Holy crap, watching the Heat play, watching the Lakers play, I've been to some pretty great basketball games. I've seen the Denver Nuggets. You and I had this argument, and we've had this argument over and over and over again. And, you know, I just feel like, I don't know. I love college basketball over the NBA. Sure. And if you were to ask me to go to a Heat game, I'd say sure. But if I had a,
I didn't think.
Hold on. I didn't think. You know what it is? It's the equivalent of professional wrestling. It's the same thing. You have college. Hold on. You have college ball is more like the indies, right? And you have a couple of guys there that are just doing like wicked spectacular stuff, but they're not doing all of the crazy shit until they get signed to the WWE or AEW or whoever is that has a TV deal. Once they get there, you're like, holy shit, you see them really blossom into a much bigger character, a much bigger persona, much bigger everything, a much bigger athlete over going over to the NBA.
And the hardcore fans will say they're not as good as they used to be when they weren't famous.
100%. 100%. Right. That's why I see that she's, you know what I mean? She's an indie darling. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's dope. That's where you get to go and see these guys before they were.
I didn't think a gay woman with a sweet jump shot was allowed to not like basketball.
Dude, you have never seen my jump shot.
You meant Nicole.
I'm sorry.
I will say, listen, I love basketball. I grew up playing it. My sister played Division I. She played at Georgia State University. And, you know, that's why I love college basketball so much, because I grew up playing the sport. And I mean, great. Yes. Big old lesbian. I love all sports. I played softball. I played volleyball. I played basketball. And, you know, I'll
lacrosse.
Watch any sport.
Play lacrosse? What? Lacrosse?
No, it wasn't like mainstream. I'm not Canadian. In South Florida.
Not that gay then.
We're like a football basketball state. I mean, think about it. All the every college football team in our state is ridiculous, and so is our.
What about that sport? What about that sport they play on ice? What's that called?
Crappy? Oh, hockey. Sorry.
Oh, see, no, I was testing you. You said it right. Americans always say ice hockey, and then I want to slap them. You said hockey. Well done.
It's hockey. Why do we have to call it ice hockey? It's
same reason why Americans say tuna fish. I don't get that either.
Why you gotta call it field hockey?
Because it's in
played
a field.
On grass.
That's a different game.
And the other one is possibly played on ice. But I mean, that would be weird.
Can I make a plug since Tim brought this up? So you were talking about like the indie wrestling federations and stuff like that. So I have become like super close friends with these really rad dudes. So there's a wrestling federation called Boca Raton Championship Wrestling, and it's out of Boca Raton, Florida. And
are they all retired seniors?
Dude, it's so amazing. Hold on. So Mark Long, OG Road Rules from the first Road Rules, also Challenge OG, he is now wrestling. And so he started wrestling for BRCW. Now, Matt Moschler and Neil the Heel, these are the guys who run BRCW in Boca Raton, and I've become close friends with them. Every time I go to a show, they like include me in the antics and all the drama. Well, because of them, I have been able to meet some of my freaking heroes that have been phenomenal. Like, let's see, one of the first events that I watched of theirs, I got to meet Jake the Snake Roberts.
Sorry.
It's hilarious. I can't Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Listen, I can't make this shit up. Like, this is like,
Did Jake pull out his classic line and ask you if you wanted to see his snake?
No, he did not, but he was really fucking cool, like super awesome.
He's chill now.
What's that?
He's super chill now.
Yeah, he is super chill these days. Once he got clean, he became a totally different person.
One of my favorites is Gangrel. Like, he,
oh, love him.
Holy crap. Nicest guy I've ever met in my entire life. And he's
sweetheart.
He grew up in the town that I was a cop in, and he and I were like sharing stories of certain areas in the neighborhood that are just like shit shows.
Yeah.
And sorry, I'm looking stuff up as I'm talking to you because I want to tell you guys a couple things that are happening. But he owns a wrestling school down here, and he trains a bunch of kids, like he trains a bunch of adults. Like, a lot of these guys are going to him, and they're just like, they're doing a great job. Like, it's just so much fun. And so we have ginormous plans coming up. So I'm going to be going to Raw, SmackDown, and WrestleMania in 2024. And so, super stoked about that. So if you happen to want to come down to Philly, I would love for you guys to meet up with me. But you know, aside from that, I definitely
know some people down there.
Yeah, we know a few.
You know a few people
in Philly.
I mean, between wrestlers and family, we got more than enough couches to crash on. It's funny you mentioned Gangrel in his school, because the last time Gangrel was on this show, he was sitting in the parking lot of his school in between like training sessions.
What? Really?
Yeah. He's an old friend of ours.
Oh, he's so cool. Like, he is really, like, what a great guy.
You're in it.
Oh, I'm in it.
You're submerged into the world of professional wrestling now, right?
Submerged that, like, oh, we're having
just
like
fanboy out the entire time.
Listen, we're having a battle royale. It's gonna basically be like a female Royal Rumble. And they are trying to convince me to fucking wrestle. And
I was going
to
say, how long before you start training, Nicole?
I mean, we're talking like probably next month.
Oh, look at you.
So you've made arrangements.
There is a possible arrangement for me to start training.
And are you going to have a film crew follow you around from the start to document this entire thing and then sell it?
Sid, you're forgetting that we're all the same age. So, like, We don't need pure embarrassment going on in my life. I've already made some choice mistakes on national TV. We don't need to have a camera crew documenting the whole thing.
Sorry, what was I?
Go back through your mental. Go back through your mental Rolodex to about 25, 26 years ago and see if you can explain to Nicole what that first bump in the ring is going to feel like.
It's going to be bad. I've already been speaking to a couple female wrestlers and they're like, come on, let's go. Like, you got this. And I'm like, fuck you, man. Like, I already know, like, the fact that I'm like a known heckler at these shows is enough that I already know that I'm going to get my ass handed to me. And I'm sure there will be plenty of those asshole fans who are not my fan who will be very happy to see this happen. So, you know, everybody gets what they want.
Three simple things that you have to remember, right? I will tell you the three most
simple things. Should I write these down?
100%. Write this down. This is coming to you from somebody who did it for as many years as I did and teach doing it. So there's three simple things you need to remember at the start. Number one, tuck your chin. Always.
Got it.
You cannot knock yourself out if the flat surface you're hitting doesn't come in contact with the back of your head. When your chin is tucked, it never comes into that position. Number two, breathe out when you land. Do not breathe in. When you land, you will be without air. And number three, you're going to want to take the palms of your hands. And when you land, don't try to catch yourself. You want to attack it and slap that mat as hard as you possibly can. That disperses the weight and the transfer along you so it hurts a lot less. Arms straight out like you're hanging on a cross. Literally. Yes.
Love it.
And tuck that chin. You'll be fine. Piece of cake after that. Good luck.
Thank you. I'm glad you say good luck, but I'm going to tell you right now that there's a 50-50 chance. And the reason why I say 50-50 is because I can never say never anymore. And I have to be open to everything, whatever comes my way. And if I think it's a great opportunity, like, and I know I'm going to have fun, I just realize that I have to say yes.
Listen, I've always said to people, if it's a bucket list thing and it comes up, take full advantage of it. I'm not saying you have to start a career, you know what I mean? You don't have to start a career doing it right now or anything like that, but yeah, fucking enjoy it. Have fun, man.
I mean, it's like Tough Enough. When Tough Enough came on TV, my best friend and I mean, at the time that's when like The Rock was popular. I mean, I will send you guys the picture of me and my best friend at one of the Monday Night Raws. And we're wearing our Lay It the Smack It Down on Your Candy Ass shirts. And like, we both wanted to go on Tough Enough so bad, but like I was fucking 19. Like, who the hell? Like, I was a twig. I was so little. Like, I was just flimsy. Like, there's no way I would have ever even like made it onto the show.
I was what, 18 years old the first time I went up to a wrestling school. I went with Tid, and Tid started bumping and training, and he took to it like a moth to the light. Like, he was a natural. He had his MMA background. And
he's a fucking beast. Look at him. Like, yeah, of course he did.
He's a beast. And he took to it like it was nothing. The first time I got in the ring and took a bump. Now, remember at the time, I'm like, whatever, 6'6", 6'7", and I'm about 180 pounds. Like, I'm a stick. I'm a twig. And I took that first bump. No,
in the gay world, we call that a twink. You're a twink.
Yeah. Yeah. Legit. No. Like, I was ready to service. My mic cut out at the wrong moment. I was ready to service, sorry, not take bumps. But yeah, that first bump I took, I was like, fuck this. This sucks. And I did a few more minutes and then I got out of the ring and I talked to the guy that owned the wrestling school. And I was like, what other jobs can I do here?
Can I do the laundry?
Yeah, right. It's tough, man. And I always give all the respect in the world to anyone that does it. But it's tough. Like, it is physically demanding. And then I look at Tid, he's a beast, but that industry took a toll on him, you know, broken neck, his spine is turned into graham crackers.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, there's there's its pros and its cons to having size and then throwing that size around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like consequences to all of it. And I did a lot of really stupid stuff too. There's no doubt.
Oh, did you ever?
But anyways, we're not here to talk about me.
Okay, fine. Well, either way, if anything does come out of, you know, my connection with them, it would definitely be, I would love to like either manage somebody, be somebody's professional heckler. Like I want to, like, if I'm going to be labeled as an asshole and a villain, like, let's go. Like, let me be the asshole and the villain that you want me to be, and let me have fun at least doing it. Like,
and you know what? Training to be a manager is completely different training. You know, different type of bumps, different type of.
I can get hit with a chair here and there, and like a door. Oh, yeah. Like,
don't offer that. Don't offer that.
I'm not going to offer it, but I'm not going to say no. Like say, like, hey, this is what's going to happen this week, and I'm going to be like, okay.
Look at his face. Do you know how many chairs he's been hit with? Thousands.
You're so good looking. You're fine.
Seven chairs.
Seven chairs.
Today. Seven today.
Seven today. Chairs at a time.
I want to be like, there's like these, you know, like those epic moments in wrestling when like the manager comes from underneath the ring and like attacks like one of the other ones. Attacks the opponent. Like, that's what I want to do.
Hey, Ted, I know you said we're not talking about you, but now I want to ask this question. I'm sure Nicole would be interested too. If you think back on your in-ring career, and I ask you this question, what's the first thing that pops in your head when I ask you, what's the stupidest thing you ever did in the ring that you wish you could take back?
Caught on fire.
Ooh, which time?
Ooh. Just in general.
Fuck that.
1,000%. Thank you, Nicole. Like,
I remember watching WWF as a kid, and probably like closer into my when I started realizing things about wrestling. And I remember watching Chris Benoit. This is wild. I remember watching Chris Benoit pull a razor blade out of his fucking wristband and cut himself on the head, like after he just got hit with a chair. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, the editing, like, what are you doing? Like, I wouldn't believe that he was bleeding for real. But like the things that you guys have done and the things that you guys do for fucking entertainment and for like what wrestling is, like, it's wild.
It's nutty.
It is nutty. Speaking of nutty, I don't watch TV ever. And the other night I just happened to have the TV on and The Weakest Link came on. And it just so happened to be WWE wrestlers on The Weakest Link.
Oh, this is like from 20 years ago?
No, this is from like this week, like this show that just aired.
That show is still on TV? The Weakest Link?
Yeah, Jane Lynch is the host.
Oh, I thought it was like just those old episodes from 2001 with the angry redhead British lady.
No, it's Jane Lynch. It was hilarious. Oh. The Miz... Oh shit. The Miz, Dwayne, Big E, Xavier.
Probably Dolph Ziggler.
Nope.
No, he's fired.
Who's the really hot chick with red hair and she's dating another wrestler? Or she's married to another wrestler?
Becky Lynch.
No.
I think she's the only redhead.
Oh. Anyway, it was hilarious. All the questions for the entire episode were all wrestling related. I knew all the answers and I was just like, hey, at least I know I got fucking that down.
You know what? If they do nothing else, they know how to market themselves.
100%.
Like WWE is the absolute fucking tits when it comes to being able to market themselves.
The Miz showed his ass perfectly. Like it was awesome. Like it was like very theatrical. It was great.
Okay, but there's a guy who came from doing reality TV. So, I mean, there's a shot, right?
There is a shot. I mean,
that's where he started. The
thing is, like, there's a shot, but, like, where do you want it to go? For me, it's, like, bucket list. I'm having a fucking blast. Like, I'm having so much fun. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that I get to, like, hang with fellow wrestling dweebs, like, is the best thing ever. Yep. And
it is
fun. It's just awesome. It's awesome. It's so much fun.
Do you know how many times I've heard that exact fucking thing, Nicole? Thousands of times. And it all changes one way or the other as soon as you get done doing your very first show. Oh yeah. That's going to be the telltale for you. That's where work. The bug. Yeah. Then it's work. But I mean, the bug
that's
will
where I'm like,
you or it won't. Really right. Yeah, but you're going to have a blast getting to there. There's no doubt.
I'm just having a blast just in general. Like
that's dope.
Where I was a year ago compared to where I am today. Like what a huge, huge difference.
I want to talk about that because you and I talked and listen, talk as much or as little as you want in response to this question. If you want to shut it down, feel free. But you and I talked a little bit off air about this. And we talked about, and I remember saying to you, it's not just you. It's hundreds of people that have been on reality TV shows and had their lives thrown out there on TV. You said that it took you a while to get back to being you. It took you a while to find some sense of normalcy in your life. Is there a cautionary tale here for people that decide to go out on a reality TV show that maybe they're not aware of when they audition?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, we're talking about something very serious here. You know, we're talking about mental health and we're talking about what a lot of people are either saying, oh, why are we still talking about this? Or, oh, you're just trying to be with the times and be relevant. And it's like, no, like if you're going on a reality TV show, there isn't really a coach sitting there telling you that your life might get fucked up. Like there might be things that are underlining or past traumas that you've been through and things trigger you. And when your back's up against the wall and you're sitting in a pressure cooker, like Big Brother, or you're on a deserted island like Survivor, you don't know how you're going to react. You don't know what's going to happen to you after you leave the show. And, you know, I think that there's not enough support for the people who go on to these shows. And I feel like there needs to be. I feel like there needs to be somebody out there saying like, hey, live feeds are real. Like, people are watching your every single move. And what's so unique about that is that you can't hide either. Like, you know, these live feeds are there and they're watching your every move. And there are people out there who are fake as fuck and who are trying to portray themselves to be something that they're fucking not. And the reason why I'm saying that with such aggression is because you don't know who these people are. You're going onto a show with 15 strangers, just like in Real World, just like in Road Rules. I mean, we're talking OG reality TV, but we're talking edited narratives built beyond belief. I mean,
right. We
all had our favorite Real World people. We all had our favorite Road Rules people. And now let's go fast forward 20 something years to the challenge. And it's all like this whole world encompasses like a narrative that is being built and characters that are being built to keep you drawn in and to keep you watching and to make it good TV. I'm sorry. I just went on a tangent. So I don't remember what my fucking point was, but
no, that's great. And but you know what? Go ahead.
So it's just, it's wild to think that, you know, people go on to these shows other than for the mere fact that they're trying to win money. Like that's why I went on Big Brother. I went on Big Brother because I'm a huge fan of the show and I wanted to try to win $750,000. Let's talk about that. $750,000. It's real money. And if you're going on Survivor, it's $1 million. I have friends who have been in both. I have friends who are still applying, who are still trying to get on, who still want to do it. They don't care how horrible my life was for a year. And that's my own experience. But when it comes down to it, you ask me every time, Donnie, and you're like, would you ever do it again? And I'm like, absolutely. And people are like, you're crazy. Why would you do it again? And I'm like, because now I have the tools to be able to handle backlash and to be able to explain myself better and be able to communicate who I am and where I come from. And I still feel like I haven't been able to get, like, I haven't been given that chance to be able to talk on a platform, to be able to really talk about how things affected me in the house, how having a partnership with Daniel affected me, how a situation between Daniel and Taylor affected me, how my relationship with Taylor is different from my relationship with everybody else in that house. And a lot of people don't understand that and they don't see it. And so people don't understand, like, oh, I saw Nicole at the Big Brother premiere and her and Taylor were like holding hands and hugging. And it's like, you realize that we went through something that none of you experienced with us. So me and her experience is not everybody else's experience.
Right. You have a bond that people can't understand.
Correct. And so I love all of my house guests. I love everybody that I was in that house with. Some of those relationships are strained and some of those relationships are thriving. And those conversations can happen. But for me, I want those conversations to happen with those people and not with people who don't know anything from nothing. They think that they know because of what they saw in live feeds that that person is the way they are, or that person is the way they are, that person is the way they are. But it's really sad when, you know, we all come out and we all approach stress and we approach media in a different way. And I'm not here to talk badly about anybody. The way people handle their stuff is the way they cope and it's the way they handle things. Me, I'm a very private person, believe it or not. I know that I'm a loud bitch. I talk a lot of shit. I want everybody in the room to hear me. If you don't see me, you hear me. And that's the one thing that my sister said when she would watch live feeds. She's like, you were nowhere on the fucking camera, but you could hear your fucking voice travel a mile away because that's just who you are. That's how I was raised. Like, yeah. I was a very timid, very shy kid. And maybe that's because of the abuse I endured as a child growing up. And like, now I'm at a point in my life where I'm like, I'm proud and I'm loud and I don't give a fuck. Like, if you don't like what you see and if you don't like what you hear, turn the fuck around and go the other way. Period.
One of the fascinating things, and you kind of touched on this and it triggered a thought in my head. One of the really fascinating things about Big Brother as opposed to other reality shows is the fact that it is all happening in real time. It's not packaged together. The producers don't have time to create a real angle, like Nicole's the villain and Taylor's the good girl and you should like her, and the way that they cut it together, they can do that a little bit week to week, but they don't know how the show's going to end.
Right.
So I always find it fascinating, Nicole, when you see someone in the house and they seem to be completely not self-aware. Like, they come out after being evicted or after the show's over and they think the audience loves them. And that's like the most recent example from BB25 was Hysam. You know, Hysam was on the show and he was acting like a dictator gone drunk with power, you know, until his own team said, you know what, bro, get the fuck out. And they threw him out in whatever it was, week three or something, after he thought he was running the show. And he was convinced, hey, I'm the gay Muslim guy. I'm the guy who does, you know, burlesque, and everyone loves me because I'm fun and I'm quirky and I'm eccentric. And he gets out of the house and no one can fucking stand him because of the way he came off as being a bit of a bully.
Yeah.
Is that something that you remember being conscious of when you were in the house? Is the way you're being perceived outside, or did you look at anyone either on your season or other seasons and go, man, you don't have to name names, but like, wow, they are completely clueless as to how they're putting themselves out there.
So, I mean, it would help us if you name names.
Okay. Well, there's this one guy from like seasons.
Okay. Daniel. Mine. Yes.
No, not Daniel. There was this one guy from seasons before mine. Uh-huh. Listen, he gave himself the name the Messiah, and like, what's so wild is that Big Brother did and this is when I was watching Big Brother, like seriously watching Big Brother. Big Brother did a really good job at portraying him and building that narrative around this huge ego, and you never heard about this guy ever again. And so I don't know if, you know, cancel culture was even a thing. Again, I didn't watch live feeds, so I don't know what he said or what people would, you know, saw or heard him say during live feeds. But the way the show portrayed him, they portrayed him as him thinking like, I'm like the Beyonce of like all the things. And like, I'm like the second coming of God. And like, I mean, we're talking, I'm not just saying that as a quote, like those were the words that came out of his mouth. But again, we don't know exactly what context that came out of and what conversation was happening surrounding that conversation, because I'm still trying to adjust to things that happened in situations that I was involved in and how things were edited and how certain conversations were not shown on live feeds, because live feeds cut. Let's be fucking real. We all know that live feeds cut. We all know that when something juicy is happening inside that house, live feeds cut because they want you to fucking wait until the episode for them to, so you can see what happened and what you're, you know, what you're paying your money for and what ratings are for. So, you know, there's a lot of things I'm not saying. You guys are assholes. Poor guy. I just have never heard from him ever again. Like, I don't even know like what he's doing in life, but
poor Josiah. You know,
he said he was a messiah. So, I mean, hey, listen, like if he felt that way, like good for him. But there's a guy that was one of the best blindsides ever, because he thought for sure that he was going to be winning Big Brother and he went home.
Yeah.
Now, when it came to me, the moment Amira went home, I fucking knew I was next. Like, I was like certain. I was like, if I don't win HOH, I'm going home. And guess what happened? I fucking placed second place in that HOH competition against Monty, and I went home the following week. And, you know, it's a fucking game. And I think that's what a lot of people forget to remember, is that, yes, we make these personal connections. Yes, some of these monumental things and some pretty intense situations happen. I mean, Big Brother 24, I will say hands down, is one of the, I haven't watched 25, so I can't compare it to 25.
But none of it?
24.
You haven't seen any?
First episode.
No, okay. Let me ask you this, because you were a former super fan. So are you not watching because of your Big Brother PTSD?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's real.
All right.
We started a group text and we're like, let's like keep up with everybody, blah, blah, blah. No way, man. After we won, I was like, hey guys, love you, but like, this shit ain't happening. Like, I can't watch this shit.
Like, so I got a question, because I don't know a lot. I mean, I've never watched the show. I don't know anything about it. I don't know the premise, but I do understand reality TV shows.
So basically we're geeking out and you're like, can you guys shut the fuck up?
Yeah, it's cool. I'm used to it. I sit across from that guy. It's easy. So, but my question is, like, going into these shows, before you go into them, are you put through any kind of psych evaluation?
Yes.
Because, okay, so right then and there, as soon as they know that, they're going to know what kind of buttons they can push with each person as producers to direct the narrative that they need to direct on any of these shows, right? So y'all sound like
batshit crazy. I can't answer that properly for you.
Right.
But
we know.
Well, but I mean,
let's look
Memphis
at it from
talked
adult,
about last
I
week.
Mean, let's talk about adult perspective here. Like, you know.
Correct.
I fucking haters. Listen, I don't even fucking care anymore. Listen, I was a cop for 10 years, and mm-hmm. the same psychological evaluation that I went through for being a cop is the same psychological evaluation that I went through for Big Brother. So that's as much as I can say.
Like, direct?
That's all I can say. So legally, that's all I can say.
Okay.
So I went through a psychological with them. Here's the thing, is that just because somebody's answering questions on a test or you're doing whatever for whatever evaluation, no one's going to really know who you are if you're not in real life scenarios in front of somebody. I don't care how many quote unquote, okay, we're going to, like when I was a cop here, we'll just talk about this because I'm obviously allowed to talk about this. Before I became a cop, during my hiring process, one of the police agencies that I applied for, they put you through a scenario-based process where you're watching a screen, This is so stupid. And they have you in a room being video recorded on a camcorder. And that's how old we are. And you're reacting to a scenario. For instance, you're standing in the police station and a woman walks in with her 10-year-old son. And she's like, this little fucker, he is like, won't listen to me and blah, blah, blah. And then she stands there with her hands on her hips and she's, and now you have to respond. So basically you're talking to fucking camera. I'm like, oh my God, here I am. Like now I'm getting PTSD now talking about this because I feel like I'm on Big Brother. So I'm literally talking to the camera, but I have to make sure I'm looking at the screen and I'm addressing the woman who walks into the office at the police station. And I'm telling her how to like handle her son.
I would be like Hightower or something, right?
Well,
or
one of the characters, like,
one of the characters from Police Academy, and just pull your gun out on them.
How are you supposed to know to react to something if you're one, not feeling the energy of whatever's happening in a situation? Right. You're not seeing somebody's like true body language. Like, is that fucker being a true douchebag, or is like, should I tell her to beat the shit out of him, or does he just need to be punished? So it's like.
Or has that child been kidnapped and we just don't know? Right? There's like you're basically trying to react to a TV at that point.
And then there's like other situations they like have you respond to like domestic violence stuff. And for me, like, how are you supposed to know that somebody who takes a psychological exam that they're really going to react the way they say they would react on a piece of paper? Or you know, it's impossible. It's impossible. And
I don't think anyone in this day and age, I don't think anyone knows how they're going to react when they're locked in a house for 3 months with no phone, no internet, no pen and paper, a bunch of strangers, everyone fucking going crazy, neurotic and paranoid, constantly thinking everyone's whispering behind their back whenever you leave a room.
That was my life.
You can't prepare for that. You can. It's called prison.
Yeah, you could.
It's called prison. You because all of those things that you
prisoners been on Big Brother.
Oh, because
people ask me all the time, like, what one of my biggest mistakes was in the house, and one of my biggest mistakes was not sharing enough in the DR, and not telling them how I was truly feeling because. I'm such a fucking hardhead and I'm like, for me, it was more of like, I didn't want anybody to know that anything was bothering me. I didn't want anybody to know how I was really feeling in the house. And so if I felt isolated or if I felt left out or if I felt like shit, I kept that shit bottled up.
And so do you think that was a mistake? Because if you'd shared in DR, it would have changed your public perception, or do you think it would have helped your game?
Both. Because it would have been my release, one.
Right.
And two, like, I'm a huge proprietor of therapy. I've been going to therapy for longer than 10 years, like just either couples therapy or therapy, like in my marriage, and then like individual therapy. But like, I love therapy. And I should have used the DR as my therapy sessions. I should have been sharing when I was feeling sad and when I was feeling down and when I was feeling paranoid. But instead, I'm sitting here trying to act like fucking Miss Badass and trying to be like, yeah, I'm good. Like I would sit in the diary room and I would be like, yeah, like whatever. Like I was just, listen, I was a cop for 10 years. I know how to compartmentalize my feelings to be able to get the job done. So there was this part of me that I felt like going on Big Brother, I'm just here to get a job done. And I'm just here to make $750,000. And so I was trying to, like, in my mind, putting things in little boxes everywhere. And then when Pandora's box opened, that was my fucking demise because I fucking blew up.
Well, because reality TV show like that is way more emotional driven than being a cop, as much as you think like, yep, I got this.
Yes.
I've been through all the tests. I've been through basic. I've done all of this stuff. I'm going to nail this. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh shit, they're pulling at strings that you didn't even know that y'all had, right? And so that's got to be the toughest part. But then you have to believe that these people were, what are we in? What did you say? Season 220. Okay, season 25. Yeah. Right?
Season 25.
You have to know that at this point, these people that are signing up to do this, they know a lot more about the game than the people that, like the original victims, as we're going to call them, you know what I mean? From the first couple of shows. So like, it has to be at this point about something. So why not? I mean, it should always be about the money.
Right.
Right. Are people still doing this for clout?
Yeah.
I guess like, it's so funny. Like I get more messages now from people that they're like, this is really weird and really bad. They're like, oh, Nicole, you're amazing for keeping your mouth shut when you came out of the house. Like, glad you stayed quiet. And it's like, well, I didn't do this show to get any attention. I did this show to play the game and win money. And like, it's just, I don't know. It's just wild. Big Brother fans are the wildest fans. I've met some of the coolest freaking people. I have like enjoyed, I've enjoyed the in-person interaction. Like,
where's been the worst though? Like, there had online. To have been a place where it's just strictly online though. You've never had that crossover. You've never had that crossover in real life.
It crossed over once. Some Survivor fan, I was at a Survivor event and she decided to show her ass on some page on Facebook and started talking crap about me. Like she was like, she took a photo of me and a bunch of guys from Survivor and my face is like half covered and she names everybody in the photo and she goes, and a Big Brother contestant that I shall not name, and then proceeded to dogpile me in the messaging. And what's really sad is that I started being part of this Survivor group because I was a huge fan of Survivor Australia. And I'm like, unfucking believable. Like I was having the best time last night. Mind you, I was wasted as fuck. I had the best fucking time. Uh-huh. I met Survivor fans who fucking loved me and like, we were like building fucking alliances. We're like, we're going to apply for Survivor and we're all going to become friends and we're going to have an alliance and we're going to win the game. That was the only time in a year. That is the first time that I've quote unquote publicly received hate. All the other hate I've received has all been online. It's all people talking shit, telling me that I'm a bully, asking me if I apologize to Taylor for what I did. And it's like, dude, we know that this is a year later. Like, if you are paying attention and if you know what's going on, you know that I've apologized to Taylor about shit that I've done and shit that I've said. And her and I are in a place of reconciliation, love, and kindness. And we both are like, we have our own lives. Like, I don't share a life with 15 of these people.
Yeah.
We all live our own life. And if we happen to cross paths in the meantime, fucking fantastic, because I love them with my heart. And the hate that some of us received from that shit that like that happened and everything that went down, it's just really sad that a year later, people are still stuck on something that happened while we were in a pressure cooker, while we had our backs up against the wall. Like, yeah, I said some fucked up things. But guess what? Dude, I said them and I'm sorry. And I've apologized 9 million times over.
This is the internet. This is the internet world that we live in. There's people that still fucking create content based on stuff from, you know, 20, 25, 30, 35 years ago. Like it's crazy what people can get away with. And not just, you know, because they're just, you just need a camera and a willing human being. And the more willing human beings that you can get, well, now all of a sudden you have the ability to create a show.
Right. Here's the thing. What I take away is for all these people that still have this bile and this hate, when Christmas comes, the holiday season, okay, it's more likely that Taylor is going to text Nicole than any of you. So shut the fuck up. Okay. They're on good terms. You don't know the situation and y'all are talking like you do. And speaking of Christmas, Nicole's never been on the front page of TMZ like Christmas in Memphis beating someone's ass. And until that happens,
true.
Chill. Although right. I totally love that they did that.
Well, it's really funny because like I obviously didn't know that it happened. Somebody was sending me all these messages and I sent Christmas a message and I'm like, please tell me you're okay. And she literally was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I was like, oh, there's this fucking thing. And she goes, girl, that happened like a year ago. She's like, somebody just finally decided to like air that shit on TMZ. And I was just like, oh my God, these people are ridiculous. But that's the thing is like, people just don't realize, like, we were on one show. We're not actors. We're not, like, you know, constantly in the limelight. Like, I live a very private life. People are like, oh, what restaurant do you work at? Oh, what are you doing? And I'm like, listen, whatever opportunities come my way post Big Brother, I'm all for it. I'm really happy. It's great publicity. It's a lot of fun. Sure. I love giving back. I get to give back to all these charities. But anything that comes after is just incentive. And like, I work for a private client. I travel 50% of the year. Like, my life has not changed because of Big Brother, period. People are like, oh, what do you do now? Like, I bet you got fired. And I'm like, no. The one thing my client said to me when I got back from Big Brother was, don't ever do that shit again. And he thought it was the dumbest fucking show on the planet. And he's like, that
wait,
shit's
Tid's
stupid.
Your client?
What?
Tid's your client?
I ain't got that kind of do-re-mi, son. Otherwise, I would. Now, that leads me to my question, because what's on the menu?
Mm. Oh,
what's been popping? What have you come up with? Because
you have for dinner, Nicole.
Very creative. You have a very creative mind, obviously, right? So, I mean, if you're, this is my only thing that I've got to do for this one gig, what are you doing?
Okay, so there's a lot of things in the mix. There's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts going on right now and a lot of unknowns. But the things that I do know, January in particular, there is the Visit Fort Lauderdale Food and Wine Festival. I will be on stage doing a demo. So if you boys want to come down to Fort Lauderdale in January 13th, I will be doing a demo at our grand tasting for the Food and Wine Festival. And I'm super, super excited. I get to meet one of my TV sort of like chef heroes, Aron Sanchez. He's also going to be doing a demo.
Demoing food and wine. Is that just eating and drinking? Is that what that is?
Pretty much. Yeah. Like okay. There's no kids allowed. Demo food and wine. You have to be 21 or older. I haven't decided yet, but I do have a very flamboyant drag queen who is going to be my sous chef, and she is going to be helping me kind of like moderate my demo. So I'm super excited about that. Come December is Hearts of Reality. It's our celebrity reality TV entity for Give Kids the World Village that's in Orlando, Florida. And basically, we raise money to provide families who have kids who are suffering from a critical illness. And it allows them to have a week at the village and they get to do things like go to Disney World, go to Discovery Cove to swim with the dolphins. But if they're kind of wheelchair bound or they are unable to participate in the parks, the village itself is like a mini Disney World and they have like rides and ice cream shops and restaurants and everything for the kids. And then November, Battle Royale, we're talking like Boca Raton Championship Wrestling, like let's go. You might see your girl in the ring talking shit. Who knows? There might be a little like wrestling action going on, but I don't really know.
I love that you said come December. That's actually my drag queen name. I wanted to ask you said
dumpster wrong.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you something because years ago, I used to work at the head office for one of the big restaurant chains in Canada. Actually, it's more than one chain. It's like a company that owns six or seven of the big national restaurant brands, right?
Okay.
And so I worked there. And when I was there,
Olive Garden? Sorry.
No, we don't have Olive Garden in Canada anymore. But when I was there, I learned about this concept of seasonal flavors that are hot.
Okay. Right?
Because they were talking about how, you know, you'll be like, you know, looking in the grocery store, watching commercials on TV, and all of a sudden it feels like everything is made with ghost pepper. Like there's a ghost pepper burger at Burger King. There's a ghost pepper sandwich at Popeyes. There's a ghost pepper menu that's a menu item that's been added to your local pizzeria, whatever the hell it is. And they talk about this concept of seasonal flavors. So
yeah,
I haven't been in that industry for a few years. I went today on foodbusinessnews.net. That's a real thing. And they said the hot flavors for 2023 are churro, dulce de leche, turmeric, and
espresso martini
barbecue. And I'm like, is this just Nicole's world? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That's
funny. I mean, yes, it is my world, but it's also regional because when I lived in Denver in Colorado, Hatch chili season is like fucking everywhere. Like Hatch chili burgers, Hatch chili whatever, like
everything,
whatever. There's just Hatch chilies everywhere, like jam, Hatch chili festival, and then you have peaches. So then you have Hatch chili peaches because then it's peach season. So it's wild. So like, I think it's a regional thing. And right now being in the food industry of things, like these fucking espresso martinis, I'm going to tell you right now. White girl wasted. Like, I don't even know any other term, and I'm sorry if I've offended any white girls, but like, give me three espresso martinis any time of day, and I am like white girl wasted. Like, that is what happened to me at that stupid Survivor party. I was drinking tequila espresso martinis, and I got wasted.
Like, I'm not going to lie to you.
So wasted that you maybe possibly, hold on. So wasted that you maybe possibly don't remember every single word that you might have said to said somebody.
Oh, no, I never spoke pictures. To her because she never even said hi to me. She basically was basing it off of, like, I guess, live feeds and whatever she says that I did to Taylor. And so for me, I was like, you had your opportunity to fucking confront me and to say what I did to hurt your feelings. Like, let's talk about it. Because guess what? There are five people, and if I could name all five of them right now, I would, but I don't want to put them out there. I know five people who have all come up to me and they have said, I am so glad that I met you in person because the way I felt about you before today, I never would have imagined that I'd be hugging you and telling you that I love you. And these are fans. Like, we're talking true fans. We're talking fans who pay for VIP experiences, who go to fucking real, like, these Survivor parties and these Big Brother parties. And these are people who literally, you would have thought that I directly went into their home and said those things to them. And you know what? Their feelings are valid. And I definitely feel like, you know what? If I offended you, if I hurt you, no, this is where I don't agree with your little hand there, gesture twink boy. I definitely feel like we all get triggered in a way by somebody. We all get triggered by somebody's words, by the way they act, by the way they look at somebody, by the way they are, and it's all valid. And you know what? Whoever is a hater and whoever doesn't like me, that's fine. That's your business, whatever. I'm an asshole, I'm a bitch, whatever you want to call me, it's fine. But like, I want to know why I did that to you. And I want to know how we can make that right. Because I sincerely mean that if I did or said anything to trigger you and to make you feel a certain kind of way, I want to know what I can do to make that better. And I want to have the conversation because the only way that I'm going to grow and the only way that I'm going to be better is if I understand why. Because I know why I reacted to things and I know why I was acting a certain way. But if I don't have that conversation with you or with whoever, and they say that I did this and affected them to the point where a year later, I'm still receiving bully bitch and you're a whatever the best one was, like dyke cunt. Like, ooh, these are words that are very aggressive. But like, say, I want to know.
Say
why.
It more. Say it more. Look me right in the eye when you say it too. Come on.
Dyke cunt.
Fuck yes.
I want to know why. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, if I hurt you that bad and you feel so aggressive, God damn it, Downey, it's your birthday, you're lucky. And you feel just finished. So inclined to like be in a space where you're hurt or I fucked with your head or whatever. Tell right. me. Like, let's go. Like, there's no reason for us to argue. There's no reason for us to fight. But I want to know because I want to make it right. And so those five people, and they know who they are, and I'm going to make sure that I send them the link to listen to this podcast and watch this podcast. Those five people know who they are, and I appreciate them more than anything because they were vulnerable with me, and they said it to me face-to-face or through a message on Facebook, and they were like, listen, I was hesitant to meet you. I didn't know how I was going to feel. And then after being around you and seeing how you were, like, you're amazing and I'm sorry. And they apologize to me. Like, that's amazing. Huge. That's yeah. huge. And then it's I'm funny, able it's to funny apologize how people, to them.
It's funny how people get perceptions. Cause I'll tell you, I'm being 100% sincere with you when I say this. When I watch Big Brother season 24 and I saw you on there, I'm like, that is a real fucking chick. That woman is legit as the day is long. There is nothing fake about her. And that's why I reached out to you and said, hey, let's fucking talk, you know? And we connected and look, we got along from day one, right? And it's because I appreciate the fact that you're fucking legit. There's other people I've spoken to from Big Brother, other reality TV shows. And like, you know, they're cordial and whatever, because they want to come on the show and they want to like, you know, plug their shit or whatever. But I can tell from talking to them, like, you're not giving me anything real. Like, right. you're still very guarded and that's okay. Right. But like, you're as fucking legit as they come. And I saw that on TV. So I'm surprised when people see something else, even when you exploded and got hot, it was from a place of being loyal to your people. It was from a place of sincerity.
Fall on a sword. I will fall on a sword. I'll say it now, and I'm not trying to cut you off, but I am cutting you off, but I'm going to say it over and over again. I would have fallen on any sword for Daniel, Terrence, Amira, and Jasmine. Period. End of story. I don't care what would have happened in that house. Those are the people that I literally was like, they are my people. And I would have done anything for any of them. Period. End of story. It doesn't matter. Whatever happened after the show is our business and our own personal story. And it's for me to figure out and for me to really like fucking dive into that shit. But if I had to do it again, those are the people that I would have fallen on the sword for. And I said that in the house, and I'm just loyal. I'm loyal to the people who are loyal to me. And those are the people that I was loyal to.
And
I'm going to say this, and I've been wanting to say this, and I know I probably should have maybe messaged you or called you, but since we're on like this beautiful podcast and it's like all about you and Tid, you helped me get through a very difficult time, Donnie. And when we were sending each other voice notes at fucking 1-2 o'clock in the morning, and you're just talking about life, I couldn't even walk outside. I couldn't walk outside. I couldn't go to a store. I couldn't go to a bar. I couldn't have a drink. And you were there for me when I couldn't even like speak up. I don't even know this conversation that the three of us are having. And even to the first interview that you guys did for me, I still felt like I had like, I was still in shock. I was still in shock from the finale. I was still in shock from the season. But you are like literally one of the people that kept me from falling into like the darkest hole ever and being an eternal mess and not even knowing my hand from like anything else and not knowing who I was. And you really literally like, you were a huge part of my healing and you helped me out of this fucking hole that like I was in. And I just want to say thank you. And you know, as much as I talk shit with you and I give you a hard time about everything, like, you are literally one of the main reasons why I survived those first, like, probably like those first 3 or 4 months of coming out of that house. Like, Tid, I don't know if he told you, but like, he reached out to me, you know, telling me like, hey, when you're ready, come on the show and like all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, whatever. Like, I don't really, who the fuck are you guys? I don't know who the fuck you are. I just know that you're from fucking Toronto and that's it. Like, so, but our conversations, half of them, more than half of them, were not about Big Brother. They were about life and they were just about like wrestling and football and just bullshit. Like, we just talked shit. Like, we were boys, like we were buddies. Like, this is why I'm not a girl's girl. This is why I wasn't in the Girls Girl Alliance, because this is just how it is, you know? Like, it's just, so thank you. Thank you for just seeing me for me and not making me feel any other way other than like, just to feel like me. And I just thank you for that. Like, seriously, I appreciate it.
Well, first of all, that's very sweet of you to say, fuck you for making me cry.
You're welcome. Happy birthday.
You're sweet. Cheers. As hell, but you're also selling yourself short, because all I did was talk to you like a friend. And you know what? You are one tough son of a bitch and you dealt with everything. And all I did was try to show you a little bit of faith and explain to you, you're going to get out on the other side of this, you know? And anytime you needed someone to shoot the shit with, I was happy to be that person. I was a fan of yours and I was proud to become a friend of yours. And you know what? It is an honor and it is a pleasure. And you're making me fucking cry, motherfucker. So you know what?
Happy birthday.
Because of that, I will have extra espresso martinis tomorrow night in your honor.
Okay, also, I'm really mad at you that you did not invite me to come to Toronto for your birthday. The fact that Joey Medina is going to be performing, I am really pissed at you.
Hop on a plane, motherfucker. It's a 2-hour flight.
The last time I dropped in on the podcast was when you guys were interviewing him.
That's right.
So thanks for
nothing. It's a short flight. Come on up.
It's too late now. I'm fucking, oh. I have shit to do.
Oh, you got shit to do.
I have the Dolphin game on Sunday, motherfucker.
You can be home by Sunday.
It's football season. Those guarantees don't always happen, Donnie.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm going to just up to Toronto on a Friday and make it home by Sunday.
Right. And try telling every Filipino in my life that I'm in Toronto for 24 hours.
No.
Never fly. No. First of all, that's where you learn trouble.
See, this is where you learn another thing that you're going to learn at wrestling school, kayfabe, which is you don't tell those Filipino shit.
I didn't have to tell them anything. Like, they literally listen, Filipinos, they find everything out on their own. They like have their own, like, it's like gaydar, but it's like Filipino dar. Like, I don't even know. Like, they know. It's just, there's a lot. But I do know this. I have to come to Toronto sooner than later. I have family that I need to see, one. Two, I need to see you guys. And there's another guy who's actually has a pretty awesome online presence. And so he also wants me to come to Toronto. And, you know, I've also been invited by many BB alumni to come up for a BB Canada party. I do know, short plug, next week is the Survivor premiere for Survivor 45. And Bryson Wen Presents is going to be having a huge premiere party in Toronto. I don't know exactly where it is, but yeah, it's supposed to be epic, like epic. Like, they throw the best parties ever. Yeah. It's pretty
amazing. Nicole, do you want to let people know where they can find you online, or fuck them?
I mean,
can we separate that statement, please?
Can
you literally separate that statement? There is no Nicole. Can we know where to find you online or fuck them? Like, can we put some separation in there, please?
I feel like there was
pouring out our friend Nicole.
Yeah.
Period, not comma.
Okay. Yeah, the comma saved lives.
Save lives. Okay. No. You guys can find me at the Butcher Goddess 11. And if you are interested in a private chef to come and do a party of possibly 14 to 15 people, no more than that, because I'm not doing it. You can email me at Nicole@thebutchergoddess.com. But please, please, please follow me at the Butcher Goddess 11. And if you have any funny edits from BB24 or anything to hash out with me or anything to say, send me a message, like a real one. And like, let's talk about it.
Tomorrow night, when I hit up the Brazilian Steakhouse before the comedy club, I'm sending you pictures nonstop.
Yes.
I'm just going to show you everything that's going in my fucking pie hole.
I mean, listen, your pie hole.
You're going to get so many dick pics.
Listen, Twink, I feel like this conversation is going in a different direction. And if you want my friends, who are all specifically gay men, to start falling into your DMs, you might want to watch your words a little bit.
Dude, Donnie,
it is your birthday.
Think about it. Double mil income, bro. Think about
it. There you go.
I'll open an OnlyFans, whatever. I got nice feet. That's Nicole Leong from BB24. She is the Butcher Goddess. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Thank you so much, guys. I miss you, and I look forward to the next one.
Love you. There she goes, everybody. Ted, you want to plug anything? You want to mention anything before we wrap this up?
You know what? It's always a pleasure to sit down with her. She's a fantastic human being. I just want to say that you can check out all of my stuff on YouTube at TidTalk, TidTalk. It's TidTalk. Not to be confused with those boring people over at TED Talk. I don't know what the hell they've ever beaten. But anyways, everything is online there. Exactly.
When they ever get set on fire.
Well, still time. There is still time for that. But that's about it. It's always a pleasure. We went long this week. That was dope. I love it. I love it. Until next time.
That's Notorious TID. I'm Donnie Da Silva. It's been a lot of fun. We'll see you next time.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Alright then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.